Pittsburgh Opera has been around for 80 years. Four score. Four generations. 8 decades as a cultural institution in the Pittsburgh area. Today we're talking about numbers and throwing opera into the mix. Welcome back to Uccello Rondo. My name is Paula Tuttle. I'm the producer of this podcast. I play in the opera and ballet cello sections, and I did 2 podcasts about the Benenim Center and the orchestra that plays in the hall. Those are a couple of my first episodes in case you haven't heard them. This April, we played Carmen, and we've played it a lot, so I decided to look it up. In the 80 years the Pittsburgh Opera has been around, they put on Carmen 24 times, meaning a series in 24 different seasons. I thought that was a lot. So I got to counting all the different operas it produced over 80 years. All I had to do was look at their website, and I found that in 80 years, the opera has had 446 productions, but only 124 different operas have been produced. In a season, there are 4 to 6 productions, and each production plays 5 or 6 times. So I'm not counting shows, but if you're curious, just times 446 by 5, and you'll be close enough. Maybe 2,000 shows. That's as many as Hamilton has done, by the way. I'll talk about Hamilton a bit later. For 24 out of 80 seasons, Carmen was part of that season. So somewhere between a third and a quarter of their seasons include the one opera. It must make a lot of money, otherwise the company wouldn't do it as much as they did. Carmen is what you call a hit. Second comes La Bohème at 21 productions. Between the two operas, it's 1/10 of all productions over 80 years. That's 45 out of 445 productions. Third comes La Traviata at 19, and fourth, Madame Butterfly at 18. We can point out that all four of these operas, the main character, female, they die at the end. The opera world loves their divas and loves to mourn them every year too, so it seems. These four productions, Carmen, Madame Butterfly, La Bohème, and La Traviata, account for 82 productions over 80 years. And we should add Tosca because it ties with Madame Butterfly, and in the last act, cellists like the quartet. 100 productions, estimating 500 performances, 5 divas, Carmen, Mimi, Violetta, Madame Butterfly, and Tosca, the darlings of opera. Together, I'm calling them Madame Moneyball. A nod towards the term that's been adopted from the movie, and it means using the analytics of a genre to determine the best path for the organization, whether it be baseball, like in the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt, or anything else. The movie, of course, made it after the book by Michael Lewis, which expands on the idea in a way that I just talked about, a quest for success through analytics. And our darling divas, dubbed Madame Moneyball, are 1/4 of the opera productions, the mainstay of any American opera company, the hits, the bread and butter. If you were to make a graph of the frequency of operas, you would see a sharp decline and a long tail. And this long tail is a term that marketers have been talking a lot about lately. Today, there are companies that use this curve as their business model, companies like Amazon and Netflix. It was something that just sort of happened, and they learned from a lucky accident. The long tail means half of their business is done with products that sell maybe 1 or 2 a year. And the other half are the big money makers. But each half is half. In the stores we know from the last century, places you would browse for music or books or videos, there was limited space. Places like Barnes & Noble, Tower Records, Blockbuster Video. Their shelf space was dedicated to hits, titles that sell. These stores don't demonstrate the long tail. Amazon has infinite shelf space, and so does Netflix, and so does Music Plus and other online stores. The hits account for half of the sales, and the very long tail makes up 50% as well. So why is everybody talking about the long tail? Why does the long tail work? Well, in these stores, they can use the customer's information to pitch the less popular books or movies. If you like this, try this. The first person to talk about the long tail, the person who named it the long tail, was Chris Anderson. He writes for Wired magazine. He pointed out that a book about a mountain climbing accident was nearly obsolete, just hanging on by a thread. It was called Touching the Void by Joe Simpson, and it was written in 1988, before the internet and before Amazon. Then in 1996, John Krakauer wrote about another climbing accident, Into Thin Air. It was a book and a movie, but originally an article in Outside Magazine. Back in 1996, I subscribed to Outside Magazine, and I remember the article. I was in an airplane when I read it, and I was thinking the story took place at the same altitude, 30,000 feet. So I was captivated. And then the world was also captivated by this story, and then the book, and then the movie. I never read the book or saw the movie. I thought the article was alarming enough. But then something interesting happened. The book Touching the Void came back to life because people who bought Into Thin Air were plugged into an algorithm, and Amazon suggested Touching the Void, and Touching the Void became number one. The long tail works like that. If you like this, maybe you should consider this. So back to the opera. Why does their graph look like the graphs of the businesses that are online stores? Half of the opera is produced only one time. Half, that's what a long tail is. It turns out the graph I made of the frequency of opera productions is what's called a power law curve. I'll post it in the show notes at accelerandocast.com. This kind of curve shows up a lot in some very strange places. By strange, I mean this. A fellow named George Ziff counted all the words in a book and found a power law curve. It's true. The word the is the most frequent word, and it shows up twice as much as of, and three times as much as the third, and so on. The 135 words that showed up the most frequently in that book accounted for half of the words in the book. When you make a graph of the frequency, it turns out to look a lot like our opera graph. I'm sure that the writer didn't plan it this way. It's just how it unfolded. There's also a formula called Benford's Law. The IRS uses it all the time. Benford's Law says that the number one will be the most frequent number in any financial statement like a year-end budget, something like 30%, where the higher the number, the less frequent. The number nine would be seen about 5% of the time. What does this mean to a CPA or to the IRS? You can feed the financial statements into a computer, and the computer can tell if the books are cooked. We're not quite sure why the power law curve appears. Sometimes there's a product that accounts for half of all the sales. Maybe one brand sells half of all the market. Or maybe an event that accounts for half of all ticket buyers for a year. People have counted these numbers, and if you're scratching your head as to why they work, you're not alone. I don't know if the opera is driving their programming with this data, or is it random? Or is any well-run business just going to play out this way? The same way an authentic budget has a particular pattern of numbers and their frequency. Any opera company knows they have to bring in the audience with their hits. And then they like to give the real fans the new and different operas each year. And maybe it's the same pitch that works at Amazon. If you liked Tosca, try X. And they probably didn't need a power law curve to tell them this. With any business, they need to attend to their customers. The big five bring in the biggest crowds, and they are always performed at the 2,500-seat Benidorm Theater. Many of the one-and-done operas are performed in really small venues that hold only a few hundred. Most of the sales are in the hits, and the hits have two purposes. Something like Carmen could bring in a new audience, but it also serves the people that like to come to the opera multiple times a year. These are called the whales. Whales are diehard fans that attend three or four operas a year. The people that see Carmen and La Boheme every time it's presented, and the whales go to the shows more than once in a run sometimes. They also attend all the new operas. Broadway shows are built on this business model. People that are repeat customers, seeing their favorite show multiple times, and they go to Broadway shows maybe 5 or 20 times a year. These are true whales. Every once in a while, along comes a show like Hamilton, where a large chunk of the audience is made of people that go to one Broadway show in their life. But the front part of the graph for most Broadway shows is made of the repeat customers, the whales. Hamilton grossed $750 million with 3 million audience members over 2,200 performances. That's 80 years of performances at Pittsburgh Opera. Hamilton makes more on the one-time ticket buyers. One show, one-time ticket buyers. Their graph will look completely different than most business models. Hamilton is an outlier in that regard. So on the other end of the spectrum, here's another outlier, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. The movie developed a cult following. In Pittsburgh, people went weekly to the King's Court Theater in Oakland, and it showed every week at midnight on Saturdays for 5 years. That's 1978 to 1983. And it came back for two more years in 1988 until the King's Court Theater closed. Rocky Horror was a hit built on repeat audience. So Hamilton's success comes from the one-time ticket buyers. And Rocky Horror, its success comes from the repeat business. Both are hits, and they don't fit the long tail, and their graphs will look completely different. So if you write a Broadway show, an opera, or a movie, you could never predict you'll have a Rocky or a Hamilton. The hits. And no one in their right mind tries to create Rocky or Hamilton, or even a hit as a business model. But if you're an opera company, you can program a hit or experiment and try to find a hit. The graph that I made of the Pittsburgh Opera, it resembles a power law curve. But was it planned that way? Is it actually a business model? Or did it just happen? 124 different operas in 80 years. Exactly half of them have been programmed once. The long tail. 446 productions. 126 different operas. The top 15 operas account for half of the productions. The next 15 operas were performed half as many times as the top 15. And the third group of 15 operas were performed half as much as the second group. I'm not sure if you can envision this. Maybe it would be better to look at the graph that I've posted. But it's been fun looking at the opera this way. In the group I've dubbed Madam Moneyball, which is the top five operas, it was programmed twice as much as the next five. Rigoletto, Lucio de Lammermoor, Barber of Seville, Faust, and Marriage of Figaro. The pattern continues with the next group, and the last half are all single productions. The long tail. Pretty cool. I'll have to ask my friend Christopher Hahn when I see him next. We'll get back to you after that, and until then, keep supporting live music, live performance, and the people that play it. And yes, try something new, but keep celebrating the hits. It's important that we all do our part and continue to make culture relevant. See you next time.